time is a flat circle. Everything we've ever done or will do, we're gonna do over and over and over again.
Afternoons with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn.
Don't make me have to separate you two again. Damn it!
On the Horn, 104.9, AM 1260, and hornfm.com. With the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Afternoon Delight.
Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father.
All right, let's go. Hour number two. On a Wednesday, a lot of football to get to, obviously. We will get to Jeff Houch. Trey Elling is here. I'm Chad Hastings. Kevin Dunn alongside. And I was probably so excited to get the Walter Johnson stats out in the crab bag, I did forget to clarify. So if anybody thought I was saying that this franchise was the Washington Senators, I did not mean that. Let's clarify in case we all don't know, right?
No, they're the Expos.
Right. The Washington Senators became the Rangers. The Expos became the Nationals. What I should have said was the last time a Washington, D.C. Yeah. team was in the series was 33, and the last time they won it was 24, and they had Walter Johnson.
But as Pedro talked about last night, and, man, I would love to get a team back in Montreal. I didn't realize how cool a town and foodie a town Montreal was
when I was a kid.
And Roberto Alomar's coming in and whoever and beating the hell out of my Cubs. And I'm like, screw Canada. I didn't get all that, right? But Montreal never went to the World Series either.
Correct.
The Expos didn't.
They probably should have.
Well, 94 probably. Yeah, definitely. I think they were the best team in 94.
That's a damn good team in 94. I always remember Andres Galarraga when I think of the Expos. Is that fair?
Oh, yeah. Galarraga, Tim Wallach, Randy Johnson, Jeff Fusaro, Pedro Martinez. Spike Owen was on those teams. They had some really good teams. Gary Carter.
Yeah,
you forget.
Right.
You forget. And I'm not even getting to the outfield. Before we get to Jeff here, Walter Johnson, you mentioned the 110 shutouts, which is
complete game shutouts.
You know how many complete games he had?
How many
that weren't that? Shutouts? Just complete. Some of them were, obviously. 110 of them were. He had 531 complete games. I don't think soccer moms would be sitting, or I should say baseball dads. Umbrella dads would be too happy with that.
You know,
nor should they be.
Somewhere, Cliff Gustafson is nodding along. 531, that sounds about right.
And you all said I was tough.
It sounds about right. All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline and continue to unpack this Longhorn team after the loss to OU. We, as we always do on Wednesdays, talk to Jeff Howe of Horns 24/7. Check all that great stuff out there. Check out the Longhorn Blitz podcast Tuesday nights at 7 here on The Horn. Jeff, how's it going?
I don't want to get over my skis and get ahead of myself. But if we get an Astros Nationals World Series, can we make sure one of those games in Houston is the Astros wearing the Atari breakout jerseys with the Nationals breaking out the old Expos powder blues?
That would be awesome. God, I would love that.
That would be cool. That would be very, very cool. We'll see if that happens. We'll see. We can ask baseball. I mean, all Manfred can say is no.
Hey, I'm at a point now where I'm cool. I didn't want to see the Cardinals, and I wanted Nationals, Dodgers, Astros, Yankees as my ideal just baseball-watching, really competitive series, and I didn't get that. Now that I got Nats on full rest against those offenses and different pitching staffs.
Let's go.
I'm cool either way.
Ready to roll. All right.
And Jeff didn't feel
it. Kevin, you're not one of the Yankees or the Cardinals. That just makes you human.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, right. That just makes you a normal baseball human. That's what that is. Jeff, in terms of these Longhorns, I listen to you guys, as I always do on Tuesdays, the Longhorn Blitz podcast. It was great, as always.
Yep.
You had a phrase that really got my attention when you said you look back at it, you watch the game over, and you thought it was an arrogant plan for Tom Herman, essentially, an arrogant game plan. Expand a little bit for the people that maybe didn't hear it about what you meant by that.
Yeah, and I thought more so offensively. What it boiled down to for me after rewatching the game is, and I thought this initially watching it, even more so after watching it from the press box and then rewatching it, I felt like the offensive staff didn't think enough, and I felt like the defensive staff way overthought things for that Oklahoma game.
Interesting.
Offensively, to me, it was an arrogant game plan because it almost seemed like, kind of like the LSU game where – and you guys have heard me say this, and if you've heard me say this too much, go ahead and take a shot right now if you're at happy hour. But the further we get away from the LSU game, it really felt to me like Tom Herman approached that as saying, okay, you know what, let's just use this as a barometer. And that's why you've heard him say things like, hey, that game's going to benefit us, win or lose. just kind of see where you're at. You know, just kind of use your base concepts, things you think you're good at, go out and execute, and just kind of see where you are. Where do you stack up athlete for athlete from a physicality standpoint with a team like LSU? And we saw Texas offensively was right there. The thing is, though, when you get in going into game six, now defenses have game film on you. They know what your base concepts are. They know how to defend those. And you better have some counters off of them. And this is a game where, shoot, guys, last week with you and then Chad, when we were down there, you know, outside the Cotton Bowl for pregame, we kept talking about what's the counterpunch going to be? What's going to be the wrinkle we haven't seen yet? We never saw it. It's like they took the same approach and just said, you know what, we're going to do what we do. We're not going to worry about Oklahoma. And if we execute, it's going to be fine. Well, no, it wasn't fine, and there never really was an adjustment to that. And it's not like that Oklahoma defense threw them anything that we hadn't seen Oklahoma do, you know, in the first five games. So I just thought, you know, arrogant was the word I used. You can use whatever terminology you want. I just didn't think it was that inventive. And it's not. Look, this is still a really good offensive football team. And the offense, well, I'm sure we'll talk about the defense in a second. It's going to have to carry this team. But you're going to have to come up with something better because – you know, you can look at different metrics. One that I really like looking at is SP Plus because I just think it takes out a lot of the junk and just looks at, okay, who's really good. Do you realize the rest of the way with the six remaining games, Texas is going to face five top 45 SP Plus defenses, and four of those are in the top 35 in the country with Iowa State, Baylor, TCU, and Kansas State. So you're going to be facing, and you know, you're throwing Gary Patterson and you know, John Heacock at Iowa State, and Matt Rule knows Tom Herman pretty well, considering how much they saw each other in the American. So you take all that into consideration. This offense has to evolve. As good as it's been really good. It's got to evolve if this team wants to get to Arlington for the Big 12 championship game.
Jeff, with the offensive line and the issues they had, 9 sacks, gave up 18 tackles for loss, and that's not all on the offensive line. You can definitely say some of that was the play calling. How much of that do you think is just the talent maybe being exposed or realized to what it actually is, and how much of that was schematically they didn't help them out?
I'll tell you what, anytime, Kevin, where I've got to look back at 9 sack games and I've got to think of two names, I've got to think of Ndamukong Suh and Russell Maryland.
Yeah.
Things have gone horribly, horribly wrong
right. In
some way, shape, or form for you. when you start breaking down the metrics, and, you know, you can look at a couple of different ones, but one thing I look at is, you know, what are you doing on standard downs? Like, and just that's really basically your 50-50 downs, your own schedule. Which should open up the playbook. On standard downs, Texas gave up 6 sacks, just on standard downs. So it's not like those were surefire passing situations. So honestly, Kevin, I saw kind of all of the above. I did see times where guys just straight up lost one-on-one battles. There were times where they didn't handle stunts well. They didn't handle movement well. And it's really kind of a simple – you know, Alex Grinch didn't do anything all that complicated. It's really simple when you look at what they did. Oklahoma went into this game. It's almost like they said, look, if this Texas offensive line gets their hands on us, it's going to be a really long day. But how do you counter that? Well, you can't hit the target if the target's constantly moving. So you saw them moving pre-snap. They were slanting. They were doing their stunts. A lot of different stuff. And Texas didn't handle it well. You know, the other thing to that is, there's really two ways you can deal with pressure. One is you can max protect and keep in a tight end and a back to do that to help. Or something you saw LSU do in the Texas game, and it's kind of one of those staples of that Joe Moorhead offense, you just put more guys out in the pass patterns and put some safety valves in there and let the quarterback get the ball out of his hands quicker. I didn't see Texas do a whole lot of either of those. Definitely didn't hardly see them do any of the latter. So I think it was all of the above, Kevin. I think it was schematically what Oklahoma was doing, guys losing one-on-one battles, and I don't think Texas really helped themselves. But was it the talent getting exposed? I don't want to say it's the talent getting exposed, but I think they figured out, again, you know, what's this offensive line really good at doing? That they're really good at run blocking. And even if you look at some of the metrics in this game, Texas wasn't terrible when they tried to run the football. But again, they just said, hey, what's the best way to deal with it? Give them movement, see if they can handle it. And they didn't handle it. And that was stuff. And I know, you know, rewatching the game, Joe Klatt talked about it. Well, LSU did that. West Virginia did a lot of that the week before. You know, Texas made some adjustments and handled it. They just never made any adjustments and never really handled it well on Saturday.
Talking with Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7 at Jeff Howe 247 on Twitter. Jeff, before we switch to defense, last night in the Longhorn Blitz podcast, you talked about the 11 personnel for Texas, which Tom Herman likes to run a lot of, but you think he may need to get away from it a little bit? Tell us why.
Yeah, I just think, well, I think for two reasons. I think one, it can open up the, I know you like 11 personnel because if you've got the right guy tight end, you can do some different things and you can, you know, make sure you've got a numbers advantage in the box when you want to run the football. I think, you know, to maybe spread some things out and help your offensive line where teams can't just chunk it up in the middle, run some 10 personnel that also gets Jake Smith on the field, and then you're going to have to be more explosive. You're going to have to be more dynamic. And you saw, you know, I know people look at the drop Jake Smith had, but there was a third down ball Colin Johnson caught where Jake Smith lined up as the number two receiver on his side. And you see Jake Smith kind of run a little post route. He pulls two defenders away, and it's a wide-open catch for Colin Johnson into the boundary. I know that's like one specific example, but when you've got a guy who's a threat like that that the defense knows they have to account for, it can completely change what you're doing. Not to say they need to get completely away from 11 personnel because, well, number one, Tom Herman's just not going to do that, so it's not worth having that argument. But number two, you know, they clearly like Cade Brewer for a reason. I just think they need to do more 10 personnel. And, you know, the running back conversation, once you get Jordan Winston back, which hopefully will be next week, I've heard TCU has kind of been in the game where they targeted as he'll be back. You get Jordan Winston back, if you like Roshan Johnson and Keontae Ingram enough to where, you know, you would maybe consider them both starters, start using some 20 personnel because Keontae Ingram's shown in his career that he can be a decent blocker set in the edge, at least, you know, passable enough to allow you to do some different things. So I just think, you know, it being in 11 personnel, you know, 90-95% of the time, heck, you're seeing at the NFL, Sean McVay's even getting some tendencies figured out and teams are starting to do that. So I just think just do some different personnel groupings and mix it up a little bit just to give yourself a chance and make yourself a little less predictable.
Jeff, safe to say a lot of us, and I'm going to ask you right now, you were pretty high on Todd Orlando, especially after the first year here, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so, and I was too. I mean, I think all of us, I don't know why you wouldn't be after what he'd done at Houston and really his whole career and then at UT. Let's say that was an 8 or a 9 or maybe even a 10 in terms of your confidence level out of 10. The last couple of years, where is that gone, and how does he fix the whole kryptonite of people getting to the edge on this defense?
Confidence level right now probably about a 5. You know, look, when you look at this defense, you can look at one positive, which they are playing really well in the red zone right now. And even in conference play, they've been pretty good on third down and pretty good on fourth down. Actually, really good fourth down defense. But you take that out of the equation, and then you factor in, yes, they have had injuries, and the Caden Stearns injury is probably the most significant. And had he been 100% healthy at the start of the year, maybe things might have been different. I don't know, but something about ifs and buts and candy and nuts and whatever. I know I'm putting the analogy, so I'll just skip it. But here's my thing, Kevin. You take all that into consideration, but you can still make your issues worse if you're just unsound and you have bad game plans. And to me, against Oklahoma, when you talk about way overthinking it, and you heard Tom Herman talk about it on Monday. He said, you know, they wanted to play man, and they were worried about the pop pass and worried about double moves and this, that, and the other. Well, how about you worry about vacating the middle of the field for a quarterback that, you know, if he comes off his first read, he's going to tuck it and run, and you're going to basically get, you know, concede 12 to 15 yards of free real estate for him. I would focus on that more. And then you hear guys talk yesterday, and the players talk yesterday, Brandon Jones talked about, you know, they didn't have a specific game plan to deal with CeeDee Lamb, which is completely counterproductive to what they did in the Oklahoma State game, where they went into that game saying Tylan Wallace is not going to beat us, period, point blank, end of story. We're going to roll coverage in the southern field. And it worked. So I think it's more frustration than lack of confidence, Kevin, because I've seen Kyle Orlando have good game plans in big games. You've seen him take his personnel and adapt to it and move things around and do different things. I just think he way overthought it, and this goes back to the LSU game. When you're unable to make teams one-dimensional, or if a team is just kicking your tail so much in that one dimension like LSU did that they don't care to run the football anymore, his game plan just sometimes – it just kind of gets blown up, and then it comes down to adjustments, and some of that stuff can be hard to do. One thing I think is just at the rudimentary level to combat some of the things they're dealing with, I don't like how kind of tight that their shades are up front. I would like to see those guys spread out a little bit more and move around. I know they do some slanting, but I just haven't seen as much of that in his time at Texas as you did at U of H. I just thought they slanted a lot more and were a lot more active. And look, I know year one when you've got Puna Ford, a legit nose guard who can two-gap and can occupy two and three guys at a time, yeah, it's going to make everything around you a lot better. And I think we all see signs from Keandre Coburn that down the road he can probably be that type of guy for you, but he's just not there yet on a consistent basis. So I think changing some things up. Honestly, Kevin, right now, I know the thought of Joseph Osai as an edge rusher is really exciting, but I think he's too valuable to this defense. I think you've got to put him in the middle of the field. As instinctive as he is, I would put him in the middle of the field, because one thing that the Oklahoma game really showed, you can have Deli Adeoye on the field or you can have Juwan Mitchell on the field. But in this league, really good play callers will expose the fact that you've got two traditional middle linebackers on the field in the game at the same time. You just can't do that for as long or stretches as they are. You know, injuries are compounding some of their issues in safety. But honestly, when you look at the Oklahoma game, guys, one of the questions we have is, how are these corners going to do? How are these corners going to do? All things considered, I thought the corners weren't that bad. I thought Anthony Cook played one of his better games, and Deshaun Jameson wasn't terrible. So there are things he can do to kind of treat the symptoms, so to say, but the problems this defense is dealing with, you're so deep into the season right now, and some of these are so deep-seated that I don't think you're going to deal with them in the next 6 weeks. It's going to take an offseason to deal with, but kind of bigger picture on that, Kevin. You know, you hear Tom Herman on Monday talk about, well, you know, we've had to scale back the hitting. We have to scale back. Well, that to me is a bigger issue, and I don't think it's a culture issue or anything like that. I just think the times where this program's kind of gotten off track in this rebuild, it's when Tom Herman's gotten away from who he is. Who he is, he wants to be a guy. They tackle at practice, they hit, they're physical, and that's the mentality they take with them on the Saturdays. Once you lose that, that's when you start to lose your identity on game day. So I just think if you go back to that, and even going back to last year, that's what they decided to do. You're coming off that streak where it was like Oklahoma and West Virginia, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, where the defense wasn't good. You know, Todd Orlando decided, hey, we're going to be physical in practice. We're going to go back to tackle to the ground. We're going to make the most out of Tuesday. And you saw a different defense, even in the Big 12 championship game against Oklahoma. They held Oklahoma to their worst rushing performance of the season. Granted, a lot of teams would take 129 yards, but for Oklahoma, that's your worst. But that's just kind of the way it goes in this league dealing with these offenses. So I know that's a really long answer to the question, but I say all that to say there's stuff that's not going to get fixed in the next 6 weeks, but there are little things that can be done to, number one, get better, and number two, just give this defense something that they can be confident in. To me, that's the big deal. Just find the two or three things that this defense can do well, maybe one or two coverages that these guys feel confident running, and just go do that to at least give these guys something they can feel good about.
That's a good answer.
Jeff, before we let you go, what do you think we're going to see this week? Bounce back. It's an evening kick with Kansas, a team that obviously isn't getting a lot of attention from the fans because they're Kansas and all that. And you mentioned five of the next six have a certain kind of defense. We know Kansas is that other team. What do you think we see Saturday night?
Yeah, if you're the offense, whatever tweaks we're going to see the rest of the way to kind of establish the second half, you've got to see them on Saturday. Because like I said, you can't just try to roll out something, you know, that you haven't practiced, you haven't worked on, you don't feel good about against Gary Patterson or John Heacock, because they're going to have really good plans to defend you. So whatever you're going to see offensively the rest of the way, it's got to start on Saturday. Defensively, it's going to be really interesting, because you look at Kansas and Brent Dierman, their new offensive coordinator. He's coming from Bethel University at the NAIA level, where, you know, they averaged, I think, 55 and a half a game. Last year they had 92 in one game, 80 in another. So good luck finding Bethel University film to figure out what that looks like. And I don't know, you know, just kind of Kevin Flaherty actually at 24/7 Sports did a really good article detailing this. I don't know if he's got the personnel at Kansas to do all this, but at Bethel they were 21 personnel, they were 20 personnel, they'd be empty. So a lot of different personnel groupings. Brent Dierman is the guy that actually authored a book on the evolution of the RPO, so it's going to be an RPO-based offense. And then when you're talking about a defense that's not tackling well, if you can get a guy like Puka Williams in space, yeah, it can be a long day if you're not on top of stuff. So I just think, again, the offense is going to have to carry this thing. I know Tom Herman wants to play complimentary football, but to me, it's about can the offense kind of evolve and take another step, take the step they're going to need to. Defensively, can you find a couple of things that you feel good about? And then in the kicking game, can you just not be atrocious in the return game to where you're not completely canceling out the good stuff Cameron Dicker and Bushevsky are doing? Because regardless of how good those guys have been, the return game is completely wiping away whatever field position advantage you otherwise have.
All right, whether it's defensive end, B-backer, Rover, is Texas recruiting a serious edge rusher or someone who can get off the edge and get after the quarterback after two games of no sacks?
Yeah, you know, in theory, Kevin, like Osai is one of those guys, but I just think right now he's too valuable to me to just put him on the edge. You've got to move him around and do different things with him and figure out based on what the offense is doing and how you want to attack them where the best place to put him is. You know, I know they think Byron Vaughn can be one of those guys. Actually, you know, one of their best, and we'll probably see him with Malcolm Roach out for the first half due to the targeting penalty. Marcus Bimage is still probably their best pass rusher on the entire team. So I think we'll probably see him a little bit. But, you know, are they recruiting one of those guys? I'll tell you what, not just edge rusher, Kevin, but I think linebacker, period. I think you're starting to see those guys are really, really hard to find just in terms of, you know, going out and finding a guy like Malik Jefferson that you could say, okay, he's pretty much ready to go right out of the box, or a guy like Gary Johnson who, you know, again, good luck trying to find, you know, 220-pound linebackers that run 10-6 and can go to the combine and run 4-4-3. You're having to either take running high school running backs and convert them, or like Kenneth Murray was at Fort Bend Elkins, take a guy who's a big safety and bulk him up and spin him down. So I think we're starting to see, you know, just how difficult it is to recruit the right type of guys at that linebacker position that can thrive and play well in a league like this where there's so much space and pace going on.
All four Josephs being all over the field, just not in the flats or guarding receivers 20 yards down the field.
That is fair. Jeff?
Well, hey, you mentioned guarding guys 20 yards down the field. This reminds me of, I can't remember what game it was, but there was a game where, you know, Manny Diaz had Alex Okafor doing the same thing. And I came on our podcast after the game. I said, I don't care what kind of, you know, I'm a novice. You know, these guys have forgotten more ball than I know. If you have a call that requires Alex Okafor to go 15 yards down the
seam,
get rid of it, trash it. It's an awful call.
Bad call.
That is a bad idea. Jeff Howe, Horns 24/7. That's a great idea. At Jeff Howe 247 if you want to follow on Twitter. Jeff, we always appreciate it, man. Have a good week.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
And we will talk to Jeff on the pregame as we normally do. That's 2 hours out from kickoff, so that'll be right about 4 o'clock. We'll get the very latest from him on Saturday right there on Bevo Boulevard. Come on out and see us. Pregame gets going at 2 o'clock. All right, let me tell you about Diamonds Direct here. They've always got something going on over there for you. The value is incredible. The deals are incredible. But what people may not expect is the way you're treated. The first-class experience you get at Diamonds Direct. That's what's really going to bring you back over and over again, the over-the-top customer care. It starts with that relaxed, comprehensive diamond education. You're going to learn all about diamonds, how they're bought and priced in the world market. You learn the inside secrets of the industry. Then you get to look at all kinds of diamonds side by side, 10, 15, 20 diamonds in your price range, so you pick the one that is right for you. All that in the laid-back, professional environment. I always talk about no pressure. There's never any rush. You can have a beverage and sit on the comfy couches while you take a look at stuff. The kids can do whatever they want in the room. They got a nice room for the kids to play and chill out. It's very, very cool. Family atmosphere is a good way to describe it. Every step of the way, they're going to take care of you. Fun. The store has a great vibe in it, so check them out. All that plus free service for life on any purchase. Great shopping experience. You're going to feel confident in your decision. You'll come back again and again, as I mentioned, certainly for the value, but also for the unique experience. Diamonds Direct, you can find them in the domain. All right, coming up.
Good stuff from Jeffrey.
That was very good. Coming up, we will talk to Rob.
I call him Jeffrey for the same reason I call you Chadwick.
Yeah, you just need to add on to a ordinary name.
See, some people will add to a name. And so if someone calls them the nickname too much, they feel like they separate. Like sometimes you'll see the wife do this. David. Mm-hmm. David. Oh, you're talking about David? Yeah, 99% of the world calls him Dave. Why are you calling him David? Because I have sex with him every night. Okay. It's a different relationship than y'all have. All right.
And then, that explanation got really creepy now for me and Jeff. I'm really confused.
Well, no. I'm saying it can go both ways. Some people shorten it to sound cool with them, and some people will lengthen it to sound even cooler.
So with us, though, you
can go both ways.
With us, you can't shorten.
I can't.
Right. You can't call him Ja.
So you notice Trey always calls me Kevin. He won't call me KD or Kev because a lot of people call me that, and he feels like, you know, like we're having sex.
I see.
Which is probably why I'm sick.
I got you. What about when I call you Billy?
You could call me Sally today. If you give me some medicine and slap me right, I'm in.
There it is. All right, big three coming up, including a retirement in the NFL. It will break your heart because he's such a good quarterback while he was playing. Then Rod Babers jumps in with the Longhorn Insider segment. He's out at 7-Eleven. A little more time for you to get out there and get registered for a really cool experience around the Kansas game. Rod will explain that to you coming up on the Horn. Trey, you and Brad making a case for the 70s. This certainly does not hurt your argument, right? I mean, what would this have been? 72, somewhere in that range?
Your guess is better than mine is, Chad. I'm just playing it off of a 70s road trip soundtrack, according to Spotify.
If you ever want to know how to use a horn section in a song, listen to Stevie Wonder. It's always a great way to go. This may be on, I can't remember if this is on Songs in the Key of Life or Inner Visions. I have both of those albums. They're both really good. He's so fantastic.
I feel like it's Songs of the Keys of Life, but I'm assuming that because I guessed that, it's the other one.
That's one of the, to me, that is one of the, I mean, that's a time capsule song for me. If the aliens want to know what music's all about, play them that song, right? I mean, it's a fantastic tune. I just like that. That's one of my favorite tracks that's maybe ever been created. I love that song. How do you not like that song?
I feel like at the old place, you used to have that as a music bed.
Maybe. It may have been, yeah. I also, I've told my wife, if I'm ever in the bed, in a hospital bed, and y'all are thinking about unplugging, right, if we're to that point, just play Superstition by Stevie Wonder one or two times to make sure. Because I feel like you have to move when that song's on. I think that one might bring me back.
If there's no brain activity after two times through that song, just pull the plug.
Maybe 10, maybe 15.
Or 10.
Maybe 20.
I feel like a half a time in the
know. Let's put it on rotation all night long and then come back in the morning, and if nothing's happened, then you're good.
Have we already grabbed your calves by this point?
Yes.
Oh, we've already harvested.
They've already been harvested.
Well, I'm trying to convince them a quarter of Superstition, and we know.
I saw that on Twitter, the funniest Irish funeral, and Irish wakes and funerals. I mean, if you can ever crash one of those, do it. It's a party. But the guy had recorded something, and they all thought it was going to be, you know, talking about people, and it's just a minute 20 of, hey, y'all let me out of here. I don't do an Irish accent, funny enough. Y'all let me out of here. Oh, and he just kept on knocking.
He's like, so
what
sick.
The hell? And then he starts naming people.
Bill, are you in there? Bill, are you in the room? That's awesome. That is so funny. All right. I want to remind you, Bevo Boulevard, the pregame cranks up at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Trey is going to join me this week. Bucky's taking the week off. So Trey's going to join me down there on Bevo Boulevard. Gate 2.
He's off all week?
Gate 2. Not the whole week.
I didn't think so.
He's off on
Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, off taking a long weekend. Swing by the Horn setup there and the Coors Light tent. Find out how to pledge to be a responsible fan and enter for a chance to win a $50 Uber gift card. Coors Light, of course, an official sponsor of your Texas Longhorns. You can also go by Gate 25, the Silver Bullet Lounge. John Bauman is going to take the Coke FM stage at 4:30. Details at hornfm.com. But come see us as Texas tries to bounce back against Kansas.
Yeah, I think they should, right?
They should. They definitely should.
21 and a half, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about the Brad Kellner says they'll cover. Brad Kellner watches Kansas as close as anybody we would have around here. He says that's not enough points. Texas will win by a lot.
Yeah, I've heard you should actually buy Rod had a good guy on, and I've heard people echo what he was saying that you should probably buy that right now because that'll get up to probably 24.
It started at, I think, 23 and a half.
Came down.
Maybe it may, you're right, it may
so
go
fading
back
Texas
up.
Fans.
Probably is what that was. All right, let's get you a big three. There's a big retirement in the NFL, literally.
The big three.
It's brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialists. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Dan Slaughter, just like I did. 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com. Not big like, you know, big, massive Hall of Fame, just big as in size. Brock Osweiler is retiring. 7 years in the league, Broncos, Texans, Dolphins. He does have a Super Bowl ring. He did go 5-2 as a starter for the Broncos that year before Peyton Manning came back. So Brock Osweiler is calling it quits. Kevin, you can be too tall for that position.
I guess you can.
Yeah.
You know?
Just a little too much. He's like 6'8". Just a little too much. Old school.
Arizona State.
Very good.
Arizona State.
Well, I don't have any Brock Osweiler like out-and-out jokes today because every time that guy...
Yeah, what is the joke there? The joke is that he sent the retirement into the office and they deflected it or they batted it
right
down.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It didn't really work.
Every time he speaks, I think he sounds like a nice guy. He seems to deal with everything pretty well. I got no issues with Brock Osweiler.
No. Yeah, he just... And look, Osweiler, it was a gamble at Arizona State. And I didn't get the people that were in love with him. I was not a huge Osweiler guy. And it kind of, I mean, you never know. There's such a crapshoot to that, and a lot of it is where you land. He could have landed anywhere, and, you know, it was probably going to be that. And getting back to Mariota, we talked about earlier, you know, we had some fun with that. I did, and I wanted to get to this, I did really like his quotes. I mean, I thought he stood up. He said, until the day that I die, this is Mariota now, I'm going to believe that I gave it all, no matter what. I can learn and grow from this situation. This isn't going to bring me down. All right, it should probably bring down a little bit. This isn't going to end my career. I had an opportunity to play, but I didn't make the most of it. I'm going to learn and grow from it. He owned it.
Right, and he was replaced by Tannehill. So 3 weeks from now, he's back in the starting job. It's not going to take long.
Yeah.
It is not going to take long. I think we may see Mariota again pretty quick. All right,
How about Kyle Allen?
Kyle Allen, four in a row going into this week,
right,
I believe.
Let's get to this.
Rod Babers, Longhorn Insider segment. He's out at HEB. He's out. We're at HEB. No, we're at Randall's tomorrow. We've been to HEB's. Randall's tomorrow. He's at 7-Eleven. Let me see if I can cover every partner
Rod,
we have
Chad's
here.
High.
7-Eleven, 614 East Koenig. Rod, you're out there till 5 o'clock today, right?
That is correct. Hanging out here, having a good time. My friends from Highball Sparkling Energy Water, Recover 180 are out here as well. It's been a great time. I thank all the folks who came out here to visit us, 7-Eleven for hosting us, and get the 7-Eleven Rewards app. You can get great specials on the Big Gulp, 49 cents with the 7-Eleven Rewards app. Hot beverages, just $1, all sizes with the 7-Eleven Rewards app.
Very cool, very cool. Texas getting ready for Kansas. We've also talked about the day off with the Astros today, Rod. No game tonight as they get ready. You like how it sets up now? You like the Johnny Allstaff in game 6 and then Cole in 7 if you need it? You go Verlander in 5?
Yeah, I think it sets up perfectly. That's definitely an advantage for the Astros to get, you know, Garrett Cole, who's pitching like the best pitcher in baseball, in 7 if you need him. But if you don't, of course, you got Verlander there in 5. And it's crazy. Like I said, first world problem that I think the concern is Greinke for Astros fans. Like I said, that's a hell of a first world problem.
Yeah, that's a really good first world problem. And it does seem like you got some bats that are kind of starting to heat up at the right time too, Rod.
Yeah, I mean, we know this deep into it. It's about pitching. So everybody's just trying to churn out runs, grind out hits. This deep into the postseason, getting to the World Series, you know the opposing team's going to have good pitching. They're going to have, you know, a bullpen that's got some arms in it. So I think the Astros got enough, you know, talent in that that lineup that they can get runs when they need them, clutch runs. The key has got to have the clutch arms, and the Astros certainly have that at the top of the lineup.
Yes, they do.
Rod, in terms of Texas football, we just talked with Jeff Howe earlier in the hour, and you guys do the Longhorn Blitz podcast. Did you agree with him with the word arrogant in terms of the offensive play calling and the offensive plan? Did you feel that watching the game?
Yeah, I said on Monday it was an arrogant game plan, but I think Tom Herman's an arrogant guy, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think we all know he's kind of brash and cocky and arrogant, and I think the game plan was pretty much my guys are better than their guys, and we're going to run our bread and butter, and we're going to do what we believe we do best, and we believe that straight up we can win those one-on-one battles, and our guys can be more physical than their guys. And they didn't think that, hey, you know what, just in case our guys are not able to win those physical one-on-one battles, just in case our guys are not up to that task, let's try to give them a schematic advantage. And you never really saw the counter from Tom Herman, even after Oklahoma came out with a really sound game plan and they established themselves and imposed their will. You did not see the counter by Texas. Tom Herman will say they countered with throwing the ball deeper and stuff like that, but they didn't really have a counter, which means they were surprised by the outcome in the early on in the game, in the first quarter, in the first half, and they shouldn't be. They should have been prepared with a contingency plan. There was no contingency plan for Tom Herman and his staff. That's where they failed.
This has to be a week where Todd Orlando is expecting, and from this week on, I mean, I don't know why he didn't expect it against Oklahoma. And maybe he did. They just couldn't figure it out. But the people are going to try and get to the perimeter, and they're going to find creative ways or maybe not creative ways to get that done. That has to be fixed this week, right?
Yeah, I mean, you want to secure the edges a little bit better. I mean, that's tight. I mean, when you have that, you know, that Todd Orlando four-eye, that tight, you know, four-eye front, he wants to clog up the middle. And ideally, he would like to force things to the edges, but he would like to have guys that can run sideline to sideline and be able to run that stuff down. And when you're playing guys like Juwan Mitchell, and when you're playing, you know, Jeffrey McCulloch, I don't know if that necessarily is their – that's not really their strength to be able to set edges or even be able to run sideline to sideline. So I think Todd Orlando's got to adjust his system. And, you know, adding Joseph Asai more to the front, I think is something that can help that, adding more bodies to the front. But now you're going to be a problem. I think you're going to be – it's going to be very difficult for you with the injuries now in the back end, the injuries to the linebacking core, to be able to schematically be able to contain those edges. So he's got to figure out something. I think that's part of it. That's why your guys end up in a lot of one-on-one situations and missed tackles outside, is because, yeah, the guys can easily seem to exploit you on the perimeter. You'd like to be able to get everything funneled back inside to your Joseph Asai, to your Brandon Jones. That's not happening right now on defense.
Rod, one more time, tell the folks what they can do if they get out there by 5 o'clock.
You get out here by 5, you can sign up to win 2 VIP passes to our Texas Tail Garden. That's our tailgating festivities, pregame festivities right before the Texas-Kansas game, 17 in San Jacinto. Also, you can, if you got time, about 10, 15 minutes, you can get a chance to get some samples of Recover 180, Highball Sparkling Energy Water out here as well, and Hint Flavored Water out here giving out samples. So a good time. I want to thank 7-Eleven and all the fans who came out to visit too.
Nice.
Always appreciate it, Rod. Be careful tonight, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
All right, fellas. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Rod.
That's Rod Babers, weekdays 1 to 3 with the Rodcast. We go Longhorn Insider segment with him at 3:30 and 4:30. Hang on, because Rod's going to tell you a little bit more about Open Door if you're looking to sell a home coming up. Also, voicemails, if you want to throw one in, 337-3776. Digger, this would be your time. Maybe call right now. Then Kevin's got one and done for you here on the Horn. That one in the 70s, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Billy was good in all of them, right? That's not Chicago to you.
There's good Billy in every decade, but I guess if you're going to pick a Billy, you got to go 70s Billy, don't you?
Yeah, but 80s is close for me.
There's some 80s Billy. There's some 80s Billy, but this is another one, Trey.
I know you don't respect 80s Billy. Just say it.
No.
Look, you've killed half the world today. Keep on going.
I don't think that's true. But another song, Trey, that I would put in one of those all-time kind of categories.
I
mean, not that it's just called, because it's called Piano Man, but there's something about that song, the way it's put together, the structure of it. I can hear lyrics from that song and the way he ties them together. I can hear it now. I can hear it 2 weeks from now, and it doesn't sound like, oh, that's some old 70s tune. It still sounds fresh.
I've seen Billy Joel live, and the best version of that song I've ever heard was some guy at Pete's Piano Bar.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
That is...
I would tell Billy to his face right now.
Yeah, of course you would.
Yeah.
You're an Anthony Bourdain fan.
Well, no, but I actually like him, but he and Elton were taking a night off. And they were doing, why don't you sing Rocket Man? No, no, no. You guys can do this.
They didn't do that.
You guys can do this together, but separate it.
Come on.
Stop crossing streams.
That didn't happen. He didn't let Elton John sing Piano Man.
I don't remember, but there were a couple where they went back and forth and changed it up. Rocket Man. Yeah, Rocket Man. Waste of money.
I can see Billy Joel.
I didn't pay for it, but.
Billy Joel rolls out there, starts busting into I'm Still Standing, and Kevin's like, what are we doing?
Chad would have loved it. I love the artistic quality to this. I love how it changes. It's like pasta. Everyone's different. No, it should sound exactly like it does on the CD is what it should.
Oh, dead ringer for me because I always say it's like pasta.
That's true.
That is my comparison for everything.
May have thrown into a little me into that character.
Maybe a little bit. All right. Trey, do we have any voicemails from the people today? Have we looked at all? 337-3776. Digger bases his whole day around this. Is there any?
Not much in the day from what we can tell.
I haven't been able to determine.
Not playing the one that says Trey is such a D-bag.
Don't play that. That one. We don't need that.
No, we're going to say no today.
No. Okay.
Somebody hasn't deleted voicemails from the last week and a half of me not producing, so I've got to go through and clean these up.
All right, there we go. Trey will clean it out, and you can leave us voicemails for the 5 o'clock hour. 337-3776. Let's get you your first one and done of the show. Here's Kevin Dunn.
So I'm going through the possibilities that AJ Hinch is probably looking at right now, and if you're just joining us, the game has been rained out tonight, and that's not a huge surprise, so they've had some time to kind of plan this out and think about it. But what it does is, if you go to a game 7, there's going to be 4 straight days of baseball, and that can maybe tax your bullpen. Yet it also allows you to throw Zach Greinke tomorrow in game 4 on full day's rest, which is big. He's also an older pitcher. I just don't know if you go Verlander game 5, and I think you got to play this by ear. I really do. I think you've got to see if you win this game. If you win this game and you're up 3-1, there's a debate on either side. There's a debate that says, hey, go get it done. Go win this in game 5 with Justin Verlander. I was looking up his career splits and really the last 3 years, his splits and what he's done at Yankee Stadium. He's got a 2.63 ERA. I mean, is you know. Only in 13 2/3. I was looking at his career splits overall, though, not just the last 3 years.
What else were you looking at, Kevin?
Oh, umpires. if you get to baseballreference.com.
That's sick.
It is. No, it is stupid.
That is so sick.
All the stuff. Game conditions. Obviously, where he's pitched. His trajectory. All this stuff is data. Hit location, day of rest, game level, all that stuff. So if you're a nerd, baseball is probably your sport if you haven't gotten there yet. But there's nothing that stands out. So there's nothing where you go, he's got to pitch in Houston or he's got to pitch in New York. This is going to be kind of a gut feel, and I think it really depends on if you win tomorrow, if you're up 3-1 and you say, you know what, we're still going to go out there and throw your Queedy and use a lot of our bullpen and see if we can't win this thing in game 5. But if you come back down 3-2, so if you win that game 5 and you got to come to Houston, to our place, where we're 9,000,001 this year, it feels like, with that crowd and those two aces, and you come beat us, well, damn, you are the New York Yankees. That would be really tough for me if you get up 3-1 not to play that card.
The other thing you got to consider will be how exactly do you win the game 4, because while your starters get spread out, your bullpens don't. So if you have to use a decent amount of your bullpen or important parts of your bullpen to go up 3-1, that's where you might turn to Verlander and say, brother, it's got to be you.
Yeah, right. No, that's a good point, Chad. So not only are you maybe worried about if you do bullpen day on game five, then, well, but we've got 4 straight, theoretically or potentially 4 straight days of baseball. Right. Are we going to wear them out on that early game, on that game 5, as opposed to doing it in game 6? But that's a great point you bring up.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to do Verlander game 5 so you can have him for an inning or two in game 7?
Because if it's 2-2, you give it to Verlander, period.
I'm going to figure this out at some point.
I would give it to Verlander at 2-2 no matter what happens. If the Yankees beat you in game 4.
Oh, 2-2. 2-2 Verlander's going.
Ball, right?
Yeah, 2-2 Verlander's going.
But if you go up 3-1 and you don't really tax your bullpen doing it, that's when the questions come.
That's when. Uh-oh. And you can say, oh, you're getting greedy at that point. No, I mean, Verlander's going to go in this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, maybe he's, at that point, if it works out for you and your other plan works, then he just goes to the celebration.
And that's right.
He goes to the champagne.
Right. No. Although, ideally, what you do is, I guess you could throw Verlander in game five, but Garrett Cole's done.
Yes.
Garrett Cole, you had a hell of a year. You're going to be popping champagne.
You'd love
Well, he's not done because they got the Nationals.
You'd love Right, that's true. Right.
Man, even me, exactly. And I've been telling
that?
You all
you
year long, this is baseball. The Dodgers, the Nationals, the Braves, they can win it. And even I'm in stuck in, this is that semifinal for everything.
What you could set.
This is Duke UNLV.
Ooh, if you went with the bullpen idea in five, that would set up Verlander Cole for 1 and 2 of the World Series, right? You could set that up the way you want to. Oh, that could be big. All right, maybe
you got a bigger ball than I had at 17. If you're working on that plan right
maybe
now,
maybe getting ahead of ourselves there. All right, coming up, it is Ian Boyd of Inside Texas and the author of Flyover Football. What did he think breaking down Texas OU? We'll get his thoughts halfway through the season. Don't move. It's the Horn.